It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
All right, you don't like me, I don't like you. Let's just get through this, okay? Are you familiar with a movie called Nothing to Lose? The problem is that's a very generic title. It is a movie that has, I am just discovering, was written and directed and starring and produced by Dan Aykroyd. It also has John Candy and Chevy Chase and Demi Moore in it.
I mean, maybe.
I'm learning more about its history, which is interesting. I remember it as an absolutely terrible movie. It's about rich people driving through a small town and getting picked up for speeding. And so then they have to go to this courthouse and there's an insane judge and he tries to murder them. And it's, I remember it as just atrocious.
Who's playing the judge?
Dan Aykroyd. And John Candy plays the sheriff and also the judge's wife, I think. And Chevy Chase is the banker.
I remember the movie being out and previews and stuff, but no, I didn't see it.
I'm really curious because, like I said, I'm watching a thing sort of about the making of it, and I'm only partway through, and I don't remember if it was actually a success commercially or anything. I remember seeing it much later and hating it so much. And now I'm like, did I hate it because it's not my kind of movie? Or did I hate it because it's terrible? Because I am learning that behind the scenes, it had quite the all-star group of people to put shit together. So it was a pretty big deal. And I remembered it's just awful. So I might have to check that out. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world not created by Hatsune Miku. We're the only one left. So anything that bothers you here, our fault. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 578.
And I can tell by the look on your face, you are not familiar with Hatsune.
I don't know if I am or not.
So let me tell you a story. Hatsune Miku is a virtual Japanese idol. She is a creation of programming and CG, and it does music and stuff. But this is a thing the Japanese have created that I find kind of interesting. It's not quite an AI. We're not quite into like Simone level, but it's just through programming and sort of facade, it is a fictitious performer. And she is popular. She shows up on things and she hosts things. And of course, she has her own music and performs and things like that. At one point, she had, maybe still has, I don't know, a Twitter account. And it wasn't a full-on AI thing. It was one of those machine learning things that people put up sometimes. Horse ebooks is the one I can most remember, where it just sort of took what it found on the internet and sort of created things that looked like tweets. And so what usually happened is they just came off as very strange, but still technically intelligible.
Okay.
And so she did this. And at one point she tweeted, I believe what she said was, "Not many people know this, but I created Minecraft." Now, a lot of people took to this idea because, as you may or may not know, the gentleman who actually did create Minecraft has proven to be kind of a horrible, terrible asshole of a person. And so people were like, you know what? I like this better. Let's say Hatsune Miku created Minecraft, because then I can still like Minecraft and not have to think about the asshole who made it. And this became a thing. If there's a product that you like and its creator is now problematic, you're just saying, no, Miku made that. A very common one is that Hatsune Miku made Harry Potter, because a lot of people enjoy Harry Potter, not so much this. And it came up most recently because I saw a video talking about the old horror movie Ravenous and its cast, which included Robert Carlyle, Guy Pearce, and Jeffrey Jones, I believe is his name, who is a gentleman who is not so much in favor these days, because I believe it turned out he's a pedophile. I'm pretty sure he's in jail now. But before then, he was a prolific actor. The thing I always remember him from, for some reason, is the principal in Ferris Bueller's Day Off. But he was in a lot of things. He frequently played villains in pseudo-comedic things and stuff, but he was everywhere. So I'm watching this thing about Ravenous, and it's talking about having this all-star cast. And it's like, yeah, with Robert Carlyle and Guy Pearce and veteran character actor Hatsune Miku. And they just like crossed out the name and put that, and still had the picture of him. And so anytime they would talk about his stuff, that's how they did it. So it was in my head. And then by very strange coincidence, two nights ago, my friend asks me at gaming, what do you know about Jeffrey Jones? And I was like, who? Because the name's not really familiar. And showed me a picture. And I'm like, that's not Jeffrey Jones. That's Hatsune Miku. So then I got to explain about Jeffrey Jones's history and also Hatsune Miku. And so, yeah, we're the only podcast in the world left that is still by us. We're the only what I'm saying is we are the only non-problematic podcast creators in the world.
Which, how did we manage that?
A bold statement on two different levels.
I was going to say, wow. I mean, are you sure?
I mean, hell, I'm also have claimed in the past that we're the only podcast that's not secretly controlled by Selena Gomez, I think, at one point. So I don't pay attention to what I say.
How would we know?
We'd know. those of you just joining us, welcome. If you came here to see Miku, too bad. We have a hat. It is magic in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And people who want to get words out or want to bring words to us, or just people, write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with whatever the hell they want. Basically, sometimes not even much in the way of words, sometimes just pictures, which it gets complicated on a podcast, but there it is. The hat, all on its own, magically forwards those emails to us. We read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour. That's the show, except the parts that aren't, which is a lot of it. So how's your week been? You're back to school now. No more vacation for you.
Yeah. It's all right.
New classes, right?
Yeah. New
class?
Classes.
Okay.
Yeah. Last quarter felt just terrible for some reason. I didn't know why. Of course, I started therapy during all that because I thought something's not right here. And I was going to do it either way, because as I've often said, if you're going to be a therapist, you should, there's at least two reasons for you to do therapy. One, so you understand what that process is like, but two, you probably have stuff, right? That you need to, you know, when you're a therapist, there's opportunities for counter transference and all kinds of stuff. And you got to have that kind of thing worked out.
I've heard it's a great career move too, because you can go back later and say, hey, I was your patient, give me a job. I'm sure that would work.
But
they don't even need to interview. They're like, I know you far too well already.
I think I think the work that that I'm doing with my therapist is working, because I mean, I don't feel great still after school has started, but it's not as bad as it was. So that's good.
I don't know if you get, I had this in the early days of my therapy. A lot of other things suddenly seemed less important, because I was like, no, I'm working on this stuff with myself. Like, whatever the rest of it, unless it was things that like I specifically needed to apply my therapy to, then suddenly it was more interesting.
I mean, I think for me, it's more of often things come up that I'm pretty much never surprised that a thing comes up and it bothers me, but I'm often surprised by when it comes up in the context of therapy, it really takes on a different, I don't know how to describe it. I mean, it's like, there's a lot of things that I have thought about and addressed in my, just when I'm home thinking about things or whatever. And a lot of times when they come up in therapy or immediately before they come up, I'm thinking, oh, this is a thing that I've talked about or thought about. And as soon as I mention it, I'll move on to the next thing or whatever. But instead I get stopped on it. So something about the therapeutic context sort of forces me to look at the thing in a different way than I'd looked at it before. So there's just a lot of material in there that I think I've attended to and I've thought about and I've worked through that I actually haven't. And I don't realize that until I bring it up to my therapist. Does that make any sense? I don't know.
Absolutely. And I think it's awesome. And I absolutely understand it. Yeah. And I think it's the biggest stumbling block for a lot of people, because that very thing, people are like, I don't know that I need therapy because I've processed my stuff. And it's like, well, go there and check it out, because maybe you haven't.
Yeah, maybe you haven't. My
biggest breakthrough moments are when my therapist asks me something and I answer and she doesn't say anything. And after like five more seconds, I'm like, which probably means blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, oh, of course. I'm like, why do I even need her? She's just sitting there. But yeah, doesn't happen when she's not there. I think something about the magic of saying it out loud to another person changes how you're viewing it in your head, I think. I don't know. That's my guess. But I get the exact thing you're talking about.
I think for me, it's... with everybody else in my life, I mean, even including Abby, whether that's fair or not, including you, whether that's fair or not, I'm constantly thinking, oh, I shouldn't burden this person with that or whatever. So there's all kinds of filtering going on that I'm not really consciously thinking about. And, you know, when I'm just by myself thinking through things, there's nobody there to check, you know, blind spots or biases or anything else. But in this context, I guess because, you know, it's a therapist and I certainly have a certain way that I want people to behave when they're with me, when I'm a therapist. So it would be hypocritical of me not to be in her office the way I want people to be in mine, which is perfectly open and trusting and not holding anything back. So all of those filters that I have with other people that, you know, I unconsciously put in there because I think I tell myself I'm being polite, but I'm actually not. I'm just, I don't know what I'm being, self-loathing, I think, but that's not happening there. That's not happening there. So yeah. it comes out. Things come out there that would never come out in a conversation with you or my wife or anybody else because of that filtering process that I've for some reason removed. I mean, I think I know
the which reason. I'm super happy about that. And I'll be honest, that was my biggest worry with you going in, that you wouldn't be able to do that. Because, I mean, you and I talked about it. I'm like, if there's anybody you're going to have no privacy concerns on, it needs to be your therapist.
Well, yeah, but I knew that. I mean, again, because I'm training to do this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I can imagine what I would want my client to feel comfortable doing. Well, yes. I can do that.
But this is still something in which you are going in preparing to treat someone like you literally treat no other person in the world. So it's not a guarantee that it's something you could have easily done, but it seems like you did. And I'm very pleased about that.
Yeah. I mean, I see what you're saying, but, and to be fair, I don't know if I easily did it. You know what I mean? I might,
well, quickly, it's good enough.
Yeah. I might have accidentally done it, if that makes any sense. Oh, right. Like there's a part of my unconscious that was like, oh, this is a completely different situation than you've ever been in your entire life. So let's do something completely different, you know,
which
that's
good.
Yeah. Without really checking with me,
yeah.
just did it. You know, placebo
in the same way that you say these filters that you do are sometimes semi-conscious or unconscious.
Yeah.
You're not always choosing to be as cut off.
No, that's the same way.
I guess that's how it, I think what you might be possessed, like, now that I'm thinking about it, it sounds like your brain just does a lot of stuff without cluing in you in on it.
Well, if I am, everybody is, because that's pretty much
how it works. Me. Literally everything I say and do is a very conscious decision on my part.
Sure. Sure.
And I should be very ashamed of that.
I am
exactly the person I have decided to be. I was like, you know what? This will work.
Yeah. No, but I think it's been really good to see things from a different, you know, sometimes the same thing, something I thought I knew everything about. Nope, I didn't. And it's been really good to see it really from a different perspective. And it's helped to disrupt certain cognitive things, again, that I thought I understood completely. And I knew how to interrupt those cognitive things, but I definitely didn't. So it's been, it's been really good. And I really like my therapist a lot. Personally, she's really cool. It's been a really good experience, and it will continue to be so, I'm sure. So, I mean, I do hope that your experience with your therapist has been as good as mine.
Oh, it's been awesome. I think we're on the verge of even moving back to once a month, because I've had quite a few times in a row where, like, I either come in and I'm like, things are pretty good, and there's not a lot to say, or things where it's like, okay, this thing came up, but here's what I figured out to do. And mostly my therapist just like listened and was like, yeah, no, you sound good. And also I feel like I'm nearing the end of therapy because we finally started talking about my wife. And if we've gotten to that point, we've exhausted every other problem I have, because weirdly in the world, the things I have the least problem with is my marriage. Like everything else comes first. But we did actually this last session end up talking about her. I'm like, I think we're at the end.
So, I mean, how do you feel about that? The idea that, you know, the therapy might end. I mean,
well, I joke about that. I think I will keep it at once a month for indefinite.
Oh, to sort of maintain.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
That makes sense.
I am trepidatious about going from every 2 weeks to once a month, because I've had a few cycles in a row that were good, but I'm like, a lot of shit can go down in the month. A lot of things. Cause with mine, a lot of it mine was very much about like just being unhappy way more than my life. Like based on the experiences I was having and the way I was feeling, those two did not match up.
Right.
And that's a lot better now, but I'm like, but even now I have bad days and stuff.
Sure.
But like nowadays I'll have good weeks, and that sure as shit never happened before.
I'm getting
pretty solid now, and we come in and there's just not a lot of like new stuff we really need to drill down to. This is interesting. I was talking with a friend the other day, and they were talking about how it gets tricky for them because they have so many different things they're working on, and it's really starting to get full, and like they don't even necessarily have enough time in a session to go through all the things. And I don't have that. And I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, But all of my issues, all of my individual ones, seem to always go back to like one or two things.
Sure.
Yeah. And so I'm just working on those things in different aspects. And I find it interesting that, like, because I don't relate to this other idea, because it's like, no, it was a basic perspective that was throwing off sort of everything. And it's about changing that perspective. And it's largely, and I hate to say it, it's essentially about empathy, but specifically about empathy for people interacting with me. What it is like to interact with me and where people who are relating to me are coming from. And sort of all of my issues with family, issues with friends, issues with work or not work, and all of that stuff seems to tie into that.
Interesting.
Yeah. So maybe I'm lucky, or maybe I'm reductionist, or maybe my friend is very unlucky. I don't know.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you feel like you're kind of getting in front of it. I mean, I am not in front of it, whatever it is. No way. I don't even know how many sessions I've had. And it's like the last session, we talked a little about the surgery. And that's the first time we really talked about it. Even though she has felt the whole time, because she knew that I had surgery, a serious surgery. And it kind of came up maybe one or two times. We hadn't really talked about it. So last session, she wanted to talk about it. And what happened was, which has become typical for pretty much every session, she learned something about stuff that's been going on with me that she did not realize was such a big deal.
Yeah.
Like, it was like that. Oh, okay. Like, for example, with the surgery, we never really talked about what the surgery was, what it involved, you know, the fact that I had a birth defect or the fact that it was an open heart surgery, you know?
Yeah. That you're now part cow.
Yeah. All of that. And she thought that was a pretty dramatic thing that, and I've experienced this before with people, people in healthcare who I've interacted with who have asked me how I'm doing emotionally or mentally or whatever. They'll ask me what kinds of things are going on in my life. And they're often surprised to find out what they are, because I don't seem as freaked out as they would expect, given that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
When I had hives one time, I went to the doctor. I had these welts all over my body, and the doctor said, "Well, there's nothing wrong with you. This is all stress." I said, "What do you mean? I don't have any stress." I said, "Well, tell me if this has happened in the last year." And it was like a relative dying, moving, and all of those things had happened in the previous year. I had a grandparent die. And the guy said, "Yeah, that makes stress."
And it's like, yeah, I mean,
you dummy.
you've got the whole deal of, you know, it's not as important when it's me. But we all have some of that. I have things that I'm like, I don't even think of that as concerning, because to me, I'm like, no, it's fine or whatever. But then I stop and I'm like, imagine another person told you they were going through that right now.
Yeah,
you'd think that was a big deal. So just because your brain is like, no, it's not, doesn't mean it's not doing stuff back there.
Yeah, there's a book. I think it's a book called The Body Keeps Score. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
No, but I like the sentiment.
Well, and that's what it's about. It's about how, you know, when things happen to you, and if they affect you in all modes, you know, mentally, emotionally, whatever, you might think you're getting past it mentally and emotionally, but your body physically is keeping the score. Still, yeah, it still feels it. And you need to work through that somehow.
Which is helpful for me, because I get my massage therapy. And there are definite times where I go in there and I know I'm stressed out and I leave. I just had it the other day where I'm like, it's not that I physically feel like, I emotionally feel better about the thing that was bothering me before I showed up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that can happen. But I think you're still, keep in mind, not only are you behind me in terms of how much you've been doing the therapy and she's still getting to know you or whatever, you're way behind me because I have been in therapy many times. Mm-hmm. So in theory, you are starting with the original shit. And in my case, I have already resolved some things in my past several decades. So in theory, you've got a lot more to work on. But also, it's different for everybody. And how it goes is different, and the therapy is different. It was funny. And I've been talking with, I love my therapist now. I'll cut you if you try to take my therapist from me. But as we all know, at the beginning, I didn't think we were a good fit.
Yeah, you wondered about it. Yeah.
And it was because she was acting very differently. And she has adjusted to me in a different way. And I've heard other people, and I hear other people talk about their therapists. And sometimes they'll say something and I'll be like, oh, from what I know about you, it makes sense that your therapist would do that. That probably wouldn't work well with me, but it makes sense for you. And then there are other times where I'm like, I would hate for a therapist. Like, I don't think it was good. And so I realized I was talking to Aaron about, I was like, so really a big part of therapy is just being able to change on the fly. Like being able to have a lot of options to you and to figure out which ones work for this person. So mm-hmm. you have to be a different kind of therapist. I suppose there are therapists out there who are just one kind of therapist, but then they probably only work for very specific types of patients.
I think you're probably right about that. Yeah.
And that was something, because that's the thing is, I don't think my therapist has changed, but the way my therapist and I interact has changed. And some of that is me and some of that is her, mm-hmm. but it's a big change. And in fact, she threw shade at me in our last session.
Did she?
Yes. I'm talking. Remember, we have the intern there. And so I'm talking. I said at one point, I was starting to explain something. I said, okay, so some people might claim that in certain circumstances, I talk too much. And she leans over to the intern and says, you don't say. And I said, I think it is illegal for you as my therapist to say that. I am pretty sure you had to take some sort of oath that specifically said you would not say something like that. And she just smirked at me and said, you give me crap, I give you crap. And I said, that is fair. That is
that's a fair. Game. Yeah, that is right. Fair.
I was pretty pleased.
That's pretty insightful, actually, that she knew she could get by with that.
She's occasionally I don't want to say defensive. She is very careful when I feign reaction to her sort of being like that, that this is the behavior I wanted her to do. But I'm aware of that and I'm happy. Like, I very specific, and this is what I need. I need somebody who's going to give back as good as I get, you know, who's not going to take it when I'm inevitably just being full of shit. And she asks really dumb questions. And I don't mean dumb like she's an idiot. She asks questions that when she says it out loud, it's like, well, duh, obviously the answer is, oh. And I apparently need that because I can talk around stuff forever. But then she's just like, so why do you even want that? And I'm like, well, I guess I see. Or like her great one is when I'm worried about something happening. She's like, okay, so what would it be like if that happened? And sometimes I'll talk about it and I'll be like, actually, it'd be fine. I'm not sure why I'm worried about that. So, yeah, no, she is great, but we had to sort of learn it. And yeah, and your therapist is getting to know you is a huge thing there, knowing what kind of person you are. But no, it sounds like it's going great for you. But yeah, I mean, don't plan to quit anytime soon.
Well, me, no, I'm not.
Yeah, I mean, that is the good thing I found. It can be hard to convince people they need a therapist. It can be hard to convince people to look for a therapist. It can be hard to convince people to actually make an appointment with a therapist. Once they've done that, if the therapist is decent for them, it is not hard to keep them going to therapy because it's like a revelation.
So naturally, and I'm sure this will surprise no one, I feel often like, while I think she's a very good therapist and I'm perfectly satisfied with her, I don't think I'm a very good client.
You don't say. No,
so I worry about that.
But. I remember early on when we talked about it and you said something about, I said something about you need to let your therapist know so she can adjust to meet you. And you said, I haven't thought in terms of my therapist adjusting for me. I figured I just needed to become a, and I was like, you are training to become a therapist. I think if your professors found out about you having said those words out loud, you would fail all your classes. I believe what I said at the time is, given you want to be a therapist, that might be the dumbest thing I've ever heard you say. But same set.
Yeah.
But I mean, the fact that you had that sentiment gets right into the heart of the things I think you're working on.
Well, sure. Yeah, that's right. So yeah, she's really great. I'm very grateful to, you know, to not have had to like see three or four people before, but I don't know if I would have done that anyway, because I, you know, part of what I'm learning in this program is just what you're saying, that a lot of times if you're a therapist, you need to be able to adapt to whoever you're working with. And that can take a while. So it's a little like watching a new TV show. Don't bail on the pilot.
Pilots are always bad.
Yeah. Watch a few. Well, and you know, give them a chance.
And my therapist had that built in sort of. She's like, usually we'll do this for about 6 sessions and then we'll talk about how we fit. And honestly, I think part of the reason I stayed is just I had weird emotional issues of like a failure if I had to switch therapists, which is completely unfounded and bad, but I'm super glad I had him in this case, because I stuck around and now I have this awesome therapist. So
I just get invested. I just get invested in the characters and I have to see where it goes.
Yes.
Sorry.
But don't leave on a cliffhanger.
No.
Speaking of,
anyway,
I think this is the first time we talked about it. I officially refuse to recommend Severance to anyone for now.
Okay.
It is incredible. It may end up being one of my top shows of all time.
Wow.
But we have finished the season and nothing was explained and nothing was resolved. And now we just have to fucking wait. So yeah. If you're like me and don't enjoy that, wait until it's got some more seasons under it, which is definitely getting at least a second one. It has been renewed. I still don't know how I accidentally sort of got into this, because this, I usually avoid it for this kind of thing. That show was obvious from the beginning that it was going to be. I think maybe I was misconstrued that it was a limited series, and that is how I get tricked sometimes.
Yeah.
But it's definitely not. Unbelievable show. Loved it. So pissed now because, like, nothing. I have more questions than when we started the show.
Yeah, right.
We
started watching Britannia. Did you ever watch that?
No, but Trish and her sister did. They bailed pretty early. I have heard is not so much a good.
Well, you really have to, you've got to let it be what it is what it is,
and
what it comes down to.
Both of them have a little bit of either British history or Arthurian legend under their belt.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that might get in the way of that. It sounds like that show is not.
Yeah. I mean, I've read a few books about Druids and about how the Celtic people lived in pre-Roman and post-Roman Britain.
Yeah.
And whoever made this show, I mean, if you liked, say, Vikings or The Last Kingdom, and you think, oh, that's kind of cool, now let's see something that's made with pre-Roman Celts in mind, you're not going to get that. I mean,
which I think is where it messed up a lot of people. Because yeah. There are, it looks like very similar shows,
yeah,
and it's a different monster. It's sort of the CW version.
Well, it's like a it's like a fantasy show set in that time period.
Okay,
you don't really like nothing about the Druids. I mean, granted, we don't know anything about the Druids, but we know.
I mean, I do, but I'm not allowed to.
We know enough stuff that it they shouldn't be like this. And also how people lived in pre-Roman Britain and in a lot of other places, it, they get some of that right. But the rest of it, you're kind of baffled. It's like, why are you, why did you even set it in this time frame if you weren't going to pay more attention to authenticity or say, you know, say something maybe somewhat interesting about this time and place? But it, it's, if you can get over, it's not going to be Vikings for people who like Celtic stuff. It's not going to be that. It's just some fantasy show that's set in this time period. It's actually not too bad. And it's kind of funny in some places and clever, but it's not. If you have certain expectations, you're not going to like it. And I didn't like it at first because I had those expectations.
Certain expectations.
Yeah. What?
I said certain expectations. I was also rubbing my nose while I said it, so it came out weird.
But yeah, so it's hard to know. I mean, some people would like it, I think. I wouldn't not
some people did, this. I think. But
yeah, but
I don't know those people.
Two seasons. We went those ahead and watched dumb. One of the reasons we watched it was because we realized there were some actors in it we liked, but and I do I have liked some of the performances. They're actually quite good. But yeah, you really have to accept it as being what it is, and it's fine. But if you want a thing was what I wanted. I think I wanted the same thing that Trish and her sister wanted. Nah, it's not that.
So, yeah.
And that's too bad because I would like to see something like that. But whatever.
What else you watching?
I think that, I mean, other things, but nothing like Oak Island.
I started a new book that I'm actually reading. So a while back, I read a trilogy by some Finnish author, and I don't remember I can't pronounce his name, even if I could remember it. But I do know the first book was called The Quantum Thief, and it was a very heady sci-fi. It dealt a lot with, I don't want to say it was hard sci-fi at all, but like complicated sci-fi.
Okay.
Sounds familiar. It was very interesting. It took effort to read, but I really enjoyed it. Well, I'm reading another book of his now. It's a standalone called Summerland, and it's alternate history where at some point in the 20s or early 30s, Britain discovered the afterlife.
Mm.
And we are now set in the late 30s where we are dealing with British intelligence and their attempts to deal with communist Russia. And it's very elaborate in that it involves an organization of agents and assets in the living world and a separate organization of agents and assets also working for the British government that are dead, that are ghosts and are operating in that world. And so it's, I'm very curious how this is going to all go. And there are things where apparently you can get tickets that mean when you go to the afterlife, you will actually go to heaven as opposed to sort of just disappearing into oblivion. But like, meanwhile, we're spending some time in 1930s Spain and Franco is taking over and Franco has created a revolutionary's heaven and you can get tickets for it. But everybody's like, it's fake. It's not really ready yet and things. And so, yeah, it's getting real crazy real fast, but he's an incredibly intelligent writer, so I'm very excited to see where this goes. And the premise is very interesting to me, so we'll see. I just got to focus on it, because it's one of those that, like, if you set it down for too long, you come back and you're like, I don't know what any of this means.
Yeah.
I have a movie I want to talk about.
Okay.
And I will not at all be surprised if it turns out you've seen this movie. Right. It is a relatively new movie that can be found on Netflix. It is a French movie with subtitles. It is called Oxygen. or oxygen if you read it on the screen. But we're on the thing, it's called oxygen.
Okay.
You have not seen it?
I have not.
I'm surprised. I would have thought it would be a thing that jumped at you. Though, to be fair, I heard about it and was not interested, and then recently heard about it with a little more context and was interested. It is a film in which a woman wakes up in what I'm going to call a sci-fi coffin. She's in a very small box, essentially, but it's like got instrument panels and things, and there's actually an AI in there named Milo, Doctor. And she doesn't remember anything about herself, but she's in this thing, and she can't get out, and the AI won't let her out, and she's awake because the AI said something went faulty, and she only has 2 hours of oxygen left. But it won't let her out, and it can't tell her who she is, and she has to get creative in terms of figuring things out based on what it is and is not authorized to tell her and stuff, and the whole thing is sort of the mystery of what's going on. I in general don't like this. There are shades of, you know, a Buried Alive movie, and I don't tend to like those. I don't like movies where I just watch people panic for a long time.
Right.
And there's a little bit of that in here, but not too much. That being said, I don't think I can recommend it. I feel bad. I don't think it's a good movie. It is, however, especially compared to what we're getting nowadays, kind of an original and unique and novel movie. And I so desperately want to give credit for that because I seem to see it so seldom. Yeah. They tried something very different. That being said, they did it very poorly, in my opinion. It is a movie that largely tries to be pretty hard sci-fi, and that is a problem because it is just full of holes. None of them tend to be very big holes, but there's a lot of them. And there's just character holes where, like, we try something and it doesn't work because of a specific reason, and later that reason isn't there anymore, but we never try that thing again. It also has too many twists and turns in that you kind of figure out what's going on like halfway through, and then later you learn more and then more. And at the end, it's the last 20 minutes or so are just punishing because it's like, oh, everything's going to be okay. No, wait, it's not. There's this thing. Oh my God. What? Okay. Now that's fine. Now it's going to be okay. Oh no, wait, there's this thing. Oh wait, that thing failed. So now it's definitely bad. We're done. We're fucked. We're going to die. Oh no, wait, there's another thing. We might live. Oh wait, now we're going to live. Oh no, 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 no. Like so many of them back to back to back. And we resolve and like, oh no, we should just consign ourselves to dying. Oh no, wait, we might not die. Oh wait, we should consign ourselves to die. And like, to its credit, we did this so many times that I'm like, I genuinely don't know if it's going to end happily or not, because we keep doing this. But just so many of them at the end. And yeah, and just a lot of the, yeah, I feel bad. Like, I really want to like this and I want to recommend it. And it's performed very well. Very good job. It's produced very well. It doesn't hold together story-wise very nicely, and I'm disappointed. Yeah. I want to recommend it, so maybe people go see it anyway. It's just on Netflix, whatever. It's a way to kill some time, but I'm trying. The older I get, I try more and more to see, like, is this something that doesn't work for me, or is this something that doesn't work? And I wasn't sure, but then Trish started making noises too, and it turned out we both, because like halfway through it, I was like, this one very much, my opinion kept creeping as it went on. I'm like, oh, this is kind of cool. Well, you know, it's good in these ways, but so I was not super happy, but there you go. Also French.
We've watched a few of Jordan Peele's Twilight Zone episodes.
How are you feeling about those?
A lot like I thought I would. The when I first heard people didn't like them, I wondered if if that wasn't just a if you watch old Twilight Zone episodes, to appreciate them, you really have to watch them a certain way. By now, just about anybody who is sophisticated in watching TV and movies is going to be able to predict the end of every single Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah, they're
not going to surprise you. If you're watching because you think it's going to be some mind-bending twist, no. You have to appreciate them for a completely different reason. And I think the same goes for these two. You kind of have to appreciate, you know, for one thing, I really appreciate how well he seems to channel Rod Serling. And I love the stuff he does. I love his narration. He does it. He's not impersonating Rod Serling. He's not, but he's the first person I've ever seen who can do the Twilight Zone shtick before and after or whatever. And it works like exactly the way it did with Rod Serling.
Yeah.
You can usually see the end coming, but that's okay. Cause like I said, you have to appreciate it on a completely different level. Or in a completely different way.
Twilight Zone is not Outer Limits or Black Mirror. It's a different thing. Yeah.
And so I like it. I think it's great. I think if you like the Twilight Zone and the spirit of it and what it does give you, I think he gets it. And I really like it. But I could understand other people it maybe not being their thing. I can totally understand
that. See, now I find this interesting for two connected reasons. One, I also like the Twilight Zone in the very spirit you are talking about. I also very much dislike this show, and we discussed it in detail a long time ago.
Yeah, but I didn't watch it, so.
Yeah, but you didn't speak to any of the things that are the reasons I didn't like it.
Oh, no, I know that. But I mean, a lot of, I don't know if I can speak to those things. I'm just talking about some people who I heard express dislike for it. I didn't think that they would like the original either.
All right. Well, do you remember why I didn't like it?
I know, not off the top of my head. I
don't that would it. Explain why you can't speak to it.
Well, all I recall is it wasn't whatever your complaints were, that I don't recall them being the same as
the no, but the, I will say
standard
one could be stated as it doesn't do Twilight Zone. Because it is trying to combine two things, Twilight Zone and very pointed, very current, very topical social commentary.
Well, I mean, yeah, there's that part, sure.
Twilight Zone expressed very broad strokes of morality, and not even always that, but often very broad, careful what you wish for, do unto others. These kind of things.
Yeah.
We're all the same. This is, let me tell you something about Black people in this country. Let me tell you something about police brutality. Let me tell you something about Donald Trump. And every single one, the point was so muddled every time. What it had to say was at best muddled, and in some cases, to me, just completely out of touch.
Sure, but I mean, I find that to me, there's a certain kind of thing that people try to do in storytelling that almost always fails. And people usually see it and can recognize it very easily in, like, say, Christian entertainment, right? Christian entertainment is constantly shoehorning in messages, which doesn't work. Yeah. And it doesn't just fail for Christian entertainment, it fails for anything where you're trying to shoehorn in some kind of message or
and you know sermon what or whatever. Didn't do that, the original Twilight Zone.
Well, that's interesting you should say that, because Rod Serling, when Twilight Zone first started, he did an interview with some place, some news organization, and he made a big point of saying, look, this is not going to be a political show. I don't want there to be politics. I want this to speak to broad themes. And, you know, we're going to be looking for original material to make shows out of that speak to broad themes and everybody can watch and enjoy. And yet, as the seasons went, and recently we watched all of the Twilight Zones that were available on Netflix or whatever they were available. And some of them did get political as time went on. Just a few, but it did happen. And of course, those were the ones that probably worked the least, because again, every time you, it's not that you can't tell a story with a message in it. You can, but you can't shoehorn it into something else. It's right.
Well, and,
it's
and Jordan Peele has managed to do that in his films real well.
Get Out was fantastic.
Even and Us had components of that. I mean, there's a lot of stuff there. It felt so incredibly toned up. And to the degree that sometimes I'm like, I flat out don't agree with this message. And it's, we're on the same side of the political spectrum. And I think what you said is just nuts.
Like, well, but for me,
just such a mess. I couldn't, you seem to appreciate the aesthetics. I couldn't get past the stories.
Right. But keep
and in the mind, stories were awful.
Keep in mind though, my position on the political spectrum, such as it is, I guess I don't even think of myself as being on the political spectrum, but I pretty much always have to, I wouldn't enjoy anything if I couldn't overlook the occasional misstep in this kind of thing. So I'm just used to it. It's just part of what I do. I mean, there are too many things that are going to have some kind of message in it that I have to kind of roll my eyes at and go on. I'm just so used to it. I can barely, I mean, I can hear what you're saying and I understand it and I agree with it too, but it doesn't bother me. I can appreciate other parts of it. And if I couldn't do that, there's a lot of things that I would like. Well, here, another example is like CW shows. There's a lot of times they shoehorn something in, it totally doesn't work. And you're like, oh my God, that was awful, but I still watch it. You know, I can push past that and enjoy whatever it is.
So if you also are good at ignoring any message in shows, you might
maybe
like
not any message,
the new Twilight Zone. Although I will say, from what I hear, it did not go over super well and it only got the two seasons, I think.
And I understand
failed after like four episodes.
Yeah, I understand. I totally understand that happening. I wish I just know. Well, here's the thing. What the genius to me of him making Twilight Zone episodes, when you watch his comedy stuff, a lot of their sketches are Twilight Zone episodes, really. Twilight Zone episodes, but it's like, wow, all of these sketches really do have a sort of a Twilight Zone sensibility to them. So it's like, yeah, I could totally do that. And I think if, you know, maybe if he figured out, because you know he can do it because he's done it, if he could figure out how to adjust it and tweak it, it would work.
And I mean, he definitely has no interest in being apolitical, and more power to him.
No, right.
Were I in his shoes, I probably would have wanted to do what I think he wanted to do. And I probably would have done a much worse job of it. no shade in that I thought I could do better. But I do think what came out was Twilight Zone mixed with something else. And not only was it not a good mixture, but I think the something else wasn't great.
Yeah, that's fair, I think.
But if you can ignore the something else and just look at the Twilight Zone aspects, yeah, it was good.
I'd still watch more, especially if he could, you know, find the, you know, because it's hard when you're an artist to find that sweet spot, you know.
And I wouldn't know. I'm not an artist.
Maybe he's also aware of, you know, struggling to get there. And I would love for him to have a chance because I'm sure he could do it. And I think I would think that the shows are fantastic. But you're right. I mean, it was interesting.
Give him a call. Maybe you can work something out.
It was interesting what you said about how it's not Black Mirror or whatever. Yeah, I didn't even think about that, but you're right. It's not.
Yeah. There are definitely shows that people think of as like Twilight Zone, but they're really no, this one is much more about the twist.
Yeah.
Twilight Zone had twists, but it was creepy. I mean, it was more atmospheric.
Yeah.
It was something a little different.
Like when you could predict what was going to happen, it didn't bother you. It's like,
although something weird happened to me the other day, and I on my way to therapy, and I was gonna tell them, like, I need to check with you guys just to make sure I'm not in an episode of Twilight Zone. But as I was thinking that on the drive over, I was like, that's too old school. I need to update it. So when I went in, I said, I need to check with you guys to make sure I'm not in an episode of Black Mirror. If you want to weigh in on this Twilight Zone thing, because why not? Go to the blog, magicaltalkinghat.com. Tell us what you thought, if you watched it, or if you want to watch it, or if you watched the original, or if you're like, what's the Twilight Zone? Whatever. We just like having you involved. Also, just as a little addendum here, the movie Oxygen is yet another one of those that I'm like, as a half hour Twilight Zone, Outer Limits, something like that, it could have nailed it. It just wasn't good feature length. All right, I believe we have two emails in total, so let's use up one of our precious limited resources here. You go ahead and read it to us.
Okay,
we will soldier on. If you'd like us not to die, write the hat, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com with something, please. The boss will come and hurt us if we don't.
Jazz sends an email titled Beyond the Binary. But what?
So it's about me.
What binary is she talking about? So outside of the DC Marvel franchises,
read
any other comics or manga? That part's for Tony, as I know Will doesn't read manga. No, I don't read manga. Although we have had manga in the house because the kids did. Read it.
Manga in the house.
So I've seen it, and I guess I've read some, but it didn't do anything for me. Anyhow, I've read, and I think own the whole Love and Robots series. Oh well, I have a Love and Robots book that Jazz gave me.
Hey,
trade paperback.
Small world, in that it literally just involves the two of you.
Which I highly recommend if you haven't read it. Yeah, and it was good. The trade I have was a good read. And let's see. And let's throw in graphic novels too. Any of those you've especially liked? I mean, you know, other than Love and Rockets, which I got from her, and I have some other things that she sent me that I haven't read yet that aren't DC or Marvel. Outside of that, I mean, we've had like Image Comics come through here, and we've had a few other kinds whose titles I don't really remember off the top of my head, because mostly Abby liked reading them. There was a series called Ghost, and I forget who published it. And that's not going to tell. I mean, there's probably lots of series called Ghost, but I don't remember who published that. Monsters, I think, was one that she was reading, which again, I don't remember who published it. That's probably also not a very uncommon comic book
title. Is it possible the title was actually Monstress?
Oh, could have been. Do you know that one?
I think it might have been. I know the first. I have read the first volume.
Okay.
And it strikes me as something she would like.
Yeah. But I mean, for me personally, I always go back to DC, and I've gotten lots of DC trades, and always, I mean, even if I'm reading a DC trade that's not great, I love it. So it's like, I know it's boring and not interesting at all, but I love DC comics, and Abby does too. We have a lot of DC comics, you know, from Batgirl, Batwoman, Wonder Woman, lots of Batman comics. I'm interested in other comics, as I don't have any kind of like prejudice against other comics, and we do have some other ones in the house, but they're mostly ones that Abby has liked, and I think she'd like to keep reading that series. Monstrous, you say it's called? I think she'd like to keep reading that, but she hasn't gotten that. I think she's got the first trade, like you said, the first volume of whatever. And I think that's it. But I think if I were to go into Amazon and look at the, you know, we keep a list of things that we're looking forward to buying, or wish list or whatever, I think the new volumes are on there. Well, what about you? Probably have a lot, right? Or well, actually, you've said that you're not that into comic books that much.
I have a very, very complicated history with comic books and anime and manga and all of that.
Oh, okay. Good. Well, let's hear about it.
All right. So when I was born, I didn't read comics. I mean, I'm sure I had some as a kid that I would grab somewhere that would come free with a Happy Meal or some shit. I mean, as a little kid in the 80s, a comic will end up in your hands occasionally.
Sure.
But I didn't read anything serialized or like specific superheroes or things like that. And then in junior high, my friend group were a bunch of people who read comics.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think you've said that before.
And I continued to not read comics, but I would hear them talk about comics and I would learn things about different arcs and different artists and things like that. I believe I read exactly one issue of one comic in junior high, and it was an episode of the Uncanny X-Men where they were at Jean Grey's funeral. Mm-hmm. I don't know which time. Everybody's died 12 times in that. But it was very good in that it was a retrospective of the history of the X-Men leading up to what had happened. And so that was very cool, and I learned a lot about the X-Men. I continued to not read comics. I was into super because my friends were also writing their own comics and they were doing art and stuff. And I actually like designed a superhero team and had my friend draw the characters and stuff. And I was going to make stories. It didn't really pan out. But that was it. Nothing to do with any of those mediums. Somewhere around here, I got into anime.
Oh, yeah.
But it was harder to come by at that point. At that point, manga, no. I did not have access. I didn't know it existed. I didn't know what that meant. College, I was too busy. So then after college, I discover that libraries have graphic novels. And that trade paperbacks are things where a bunch of comics were put together into what is sort of a graphic novel.
Yep, sort of.
And I went to the library and I started reading this one I'd heard about many times from the guy who I'd also heard had written. I think by that point, maybe I knew what Neverwhere was. I don't know. I'd heard of Neil Gaiman and I'd heard Sandman was his thing. And I started reading it and I read all of Sandman. And then I read the spinoff of Lucifer and I read all of Lucifer. And then I read other spinoffs that took place in The Dreaming or that were other characters, a lot of thing under the Vertigo DC imprint. Yeah. And it sort of went from there. I also became friends with people who read comics. I mean, who have read comics their whole lives and are in their 50s and still go to the store when the new issues come out and buy them. And their house is full of boxes that are full of comics.
Yeah, right.
Sorry, somebody from Florida is calling me. I don't know what that's about. And so through them, they lent me trade paperbacks. And they would say, oh, you like this? Try this. So then I branched out into things like Grant Morrison, Brian K. Vaughan. I read The Invisibles and loved it. I read The Filth and I loved that. I read Ex Machina, most of it, and I really liked that. I read Why, The Last Man, things like this. I really enjoyed these. I discovered manga. I didn't really read any of them. The art was not as interesting to me. And I was never that big into the art. I was much more about the story. They just happened to have pictures. And at a certain point, my interest in anime and manga and stuff shifted because I also discovered, I think in college, that a lot of that was borderline or sometimes outright pornographic. And I like porn. So then I got into that. And then at a certain point, I was like, nowadays, I basically only do any anime or doujinshi or manga if it's pornographic. And I very recently have been thinking, I like the melodrama and spectacle of an anime story. I really should get back into anime series that aren't porn. Because those could be fun. And I did have some. There was a while, especially during that very short time of torrenting everything I could get my hands on illegally. I got several anime series. That's how, when I got into Witch Hunter Robin and some of the other like vampire related ones and stuff like that. But there are a few now. And now that the Nibblings are getting into it, because the neighbor children are really into some of them. And I'm not interested in some of the ones they are, but the other ones I am. So I've been thinking, and now that it's fucking everywhere, also every streaming service has an anime section. I've been thinking I should get into that. Manga still are, I don't know. Sometimes I'm curious and sometimes I look online and I see sort of what the plots are. And sometimes the manga plots are way more nuanced and interesting than the anime they're based off of. And for a while, everybody was buying me comics. I have some trade paperbacks and Trish got me the greatest comics of 2010 or something. This is a big hardbound book. And I own trades and hardcover for Sandman. And trades for Lucifer and stuff like that. But I kind of am over it. And I'm just recently, as you mentioned, thinking I might not be into comics or particularly into superheroes. Part of the reason I was never into comics is I don't like the stuff that doesn't end. And that was a problem for me. You know this already. When I read books, I have to read the first book in the series. And in fact, if it's a sequel series, I have to read the first book in the book before that, the series before that. And it's very hard to go back to the first ever Spider-Man or the first ever Batman. It's really hard. I don't have millions of dollars / a time machine. And so I wanted like condensed things. Or again, like with Sandman, I read it after it was done. And admittedly, they brought it back and I've looked into it a little bit, but like full on bookmarks, this is the end of the series kind of thing. But tied into that is, it's too messy. Comic books are too messy. I don't like plot holes. And comic books are more whole than plot. If you look at them in the long run, if you look in a particular particular story arc, fine. But then you compare it to the next one and they're like, those are contradicting each other like every other page. And it's become soap operas and I can't do those either anymore. I used to, but.
Yeah. I mean, when I was growing up reading comic books, they were very episodic. You know, you didn't expect there to be, I mean, that's part of the reason I liked them. I didn't like soap operas or even when I watched sitcoms back in the day, they didn't really carry over plot from one thing to the next.
It was very intentionally, everything had to go back to normal by the end.
Well, right. And in fact, I think the only reason I could watch fiction on TV was because they were really just sketch shows with stock characters is how I watched. That's how in my head. And that's the only reason I could watch it. If anyone ever tried to get me to watch something that had something that was, you had to watch the next or whatever, like any soap opera, didn't care. Couldn't deal with that.
Yeah.
And comic books weren't like that when I was young and reading them when I was little. And when they started to get that way, I got less interested for the same reasons you're just saying. So, but I mean, I have subscribed for like years at a time and followed several arcs and it's been interesting. And I've kind of, you know, after college, when I got more interested in fiction and how it works, I think I got more tolerant of that kind of thing. And I do like, you know, I like to binge TV shows that have an arc that goes the whole way and stuff like that.
Me too. Babylon 5 was a game changer for me all around. Babylon 5 was the first time it was a show that really had an arc that mattered. And it was also a show that had a set ending that it was coming for.
Mm.
And mm-hmm. both of those concepts at the same time transformed my brain. And nowadays I can see it very clearly. I love stories. Stories need to have endings. That is, the ending is a critical part of a story. Yeah. I'm now in Final Fantasy 14. One of the reasons I finally made the decision to do that is the last expansion that came out ends this huge story they've been doing. Now, don't get me wrong, they're still coming out with shit. They dropped a new patch the other day that has new story content, but it's like a different story, a spin-off story. It's different things. Even people who are up at that level, which I'm so far from that, are like, no, Endwalker completed the plot that started in the beginning of the game. And I'm like, that's what I want.
Yeah.
And even my shows that I love, I was sad for a minute, but I love that Good Place ended after four seasons.
Right, right. And, you know, and I like the British version of The Office.
Yes.
Partly because they knew when to stop.
Yes.
But I like
comics also, just seem like Lost to me.
Yeah, maybe. But I also, because I started with superheroes in such an episodic way, it's very easy for me to think of, well, this is a Batman story and this is a Batman story. And I like stories with Batman in them. They can be completely different. They don't have to have any continuity. I mean, you can go from one writer and artist to another, like right after the other, where there's supposed to be continuity. And I don't care if there's continuity. Yeah. I just like that it's got Batman in it and it's a different take on Batman.
There's a buy-in factor. There's definitely shows and book series and stuff that I'm like, I bought in because of this reason, this reason, this reason. The show went on to do things I didn't like, but those three reasons still exist.
Yeah, right.
And had I known at the time, I might not have gotten involved. But now that I do, I still like it for those reasons.
Sure, sure. Yeah. I watch.
But that doesn't happen to me very often.
I watch Legends of Tomorrow. I've basically stopped watching all the other DC shows, but I still watch Legends and I still like it, even though it's totally,
I mean,
nuts.
That show has just become the cosplay comedy hour. That show figured it out. That show was like, we're just some bizarre, silly bullshit. Let's run with that. And that's what people want.
I keep trying to get
Trish totally and Steph back to it. They went through several seasons, but there's more now. And I'm like, I think it's really going to get into the kind of shit you guys like watching, but they haven't gone back to it yet.
It's fun. And I like Katie Lotz. I've liked her in everything she's ever been in. I think she's a very underrated actor.
I have a hard time with that concept that people have where it's like, this show sucks, but I really like this actor, so I keep watching. I have the opposite problem. I'm like, if a show sucks, but it has somebody I really like, it makes me like them less. Rather than the buffeting the show for me. Now, a character can do it. If it's like, this show sucks, but this character is good, regardless of who it's played by, that I can do. But if it's like, no, in amongst the suckage is somebody who I know is really good, also being in the suckage, I'm like, no, I just think less. But yeah, you can get there with the character. Like I watched far more of The Blacklist than I ever should for James Spader in a hat. James Spader in a hat was weirdly compelling, but the rest of the show I hated so much that eventually he could not overcome, even with his hat, the problems of it. But yeah, people talk about that and I'm just like, no, that doesn't make me tolerate a show. That makes me less tolerant of the actor I love. So sad on me. Like, I definitely don't prefer my version.
Well, I mean, I think that's
how it often happens.
I really don't
think much of Anthony Hopkins these days because he's been in so many stinkers.
Katie Lotz is also doing a good job with this character. I do like the character that she plays.
There you go.
I suppose if she wasn't, maybe it wouldn't matter that it's Katie Lotz.
Or do it. Yeah, do it the other way. Do it. The character's just as good, but it's an actress you never heard of.
Yeah. I mean, that's true for some of the people on the shows. Yeah, that's true.
Some of the people on the show aren't Katie Lotz. One or two.
But there are some characters on the show I don't like. But overall, there are several characters that
and,
I like.
I mean,
But the difference
something hits you hard enough that it sticks with it. There are still people out there who think that Firefly jumped the shark when Tara died in season 6 of Buffy. They were so mad about that, that any Joss Whedon property that came after it, they're like, it sucks. Because
the difference
still
is there are characters I like in Legends. And if that actor was in a movie, I wouldn't go see that movie. If Katie Lotz is in a movie, I'll probably watch it and I'll probably like it. That's the difference. But
see, it's that second bit there. And I'll probably like it. I can't do that.
Because she's been good in all this stuff. And I hope I like it. She's been good in everything I've seen her in. But maybe she wouldn't be in one. I don't know. But it's kind of like...
Don't find out. Don't find out. And I know you'll go see it. Write to her and encourage her not to be in movies. Just in case.
Aren't there actors that, like... For example, F. Murray Abraham has been in some terrible movies. But you got to give it to him. He acted well in them.
Yes. Well, yes.
It's like he did a good job. I got to give it to him.
If you cut out and only showed me the Anthony Hopkins scenes from Free Jack, it would probably, I shouldn't say that. I fucking love Free Jack, but I love Free Jack because it is terrible. But like, yes, then it becomes an issue of percentages.
Yeah.
If the actor I like is acting well, but also, no. I have, on rare occasion, seen F. Murray Abraham phone it the fuck in.
Oh, I don't know if I've seen that.
They're usually very small roles, but actually, I'm not even sure I did. But I mean, there are actors that I'm like really good, and I'm just like, that wasn't them being good. That was them not giving a shit.
I've never seen Idris Elba phone in a performance, as far as I know. I think he's always doing a good job, even if the film is terrible.
All right. To that, all I can say is Cats. I'm not saying he didn't phone it. I'm not saying he phoned it in. I think he worked really hard. His scenes are not better than the rest of it.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't know, but
okay. It's all, don't see it. Don't. This is one of those few movies that I'm like, it's as bad as you've heard. Don't see it. This is me saying this, who wants you to see all. There is no good can come of anyone else seeing that movie. It's awful. And it's not because the actors were lazy, because I don't think they were.
Okay.
Is awful.
I mean, because they've got, it's not just him in it. There's like really great actors.
Yes. Yes. Dame Judy is there. Ian McKellen. Yeah. Actually, I will say, Ian McKellen's primary scene was almost good. Almost.
Well, that's not that surprising.
Judy Dench's work, none of the time Judy Dench was on the screen was good.
Wow.
A combination of the visuals and the lines they made her say.
No. Wow.
No.
That's hard to do, to make her look bad.
Yeah, it costs millions and millions in very special effects and some dumbass lines.
Hmm.
And a lot of training to teach them all how to move like cats. Have you seen the pitch meeting for it? Watch the pitch meeting for it. That is what the movie is. What the pitch meeting has it right.
No, I don't know if I have seen
it's
that.
Incredibly,
I should watch it.
It's incredibly jellical. And luckily we're over time, just as I think I came up with the title for the episode, so that worked out well. I love those, that as soon as it's, because I don't say them thinking it's going to be the title, and I didn't this time either, but as soon as it was out of my mouth I was like, huh? So there we are. But we are over time. Please write in themagicaltalkinghead@gmail.com so that we can also abuse the things you say to talk about other things. But also, I think we got to the heart of it. I think Jazz will be pleased. And really, that's what we're all going for. But also, yeah, write in. Go to the blog, magicaltalkinghead.com. I feel like there's a bunch of shit here that either of us said that you might strongly disagree with. Come at us, bro. Do it. Also, any of you listening who are not currently in therapy, go get into therapy. That's actually more important to me than that you listen to this podcast. Have a happy Easter, whatever that means to you. In my case, it's a relaxing Sunday, like most of them. But, you know, I hope it's good for you. Don't watch Cats. Don't.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.